All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Welcome to today's SNEB webinar. My name is Rachel Dager. I'm the Executive Director of SNEB and glad you could join us today. We have an expert panel and a very interesting and timely topic. If you look in the GoToWebinar toolbar, there'll be a handout tab, and there's the slides for today, the one titled SNEB March 2017 Policy Webinar. Those are the slides where you can download to take notes. There's also two other pieces of resource material that they'll reference during the course of the presentation, so that's there for your reference as well. We will take questions at the end of the presentation, so please type those in the question box so we can get those to our presenters. If for some reason we have more questions than we have time for, which may be the case, we've already talked about, oh, there's one of the links not working. Okay, let me make sure that I'll fix that. If there's more questions than we have time for, we can do a follow-up email to everyone and to make sure that those questions get answered. When I close out the webinar today, there'll be a short survey, and we appreciate your feedback on this session as well as ideas for future sessions. And then watch for a follow-up email. We'll get that out by the end of the day on Friday. That'll include the link to the recording that we're making, the handout material. If for some reason one of the links isn't working, we'll make sure that that's included in the follow-up email, and then the CEU certificate that you're earning for your attendance today. So our moderator today is Claire Uno, who's the Assistant Executive Director at the Laurie M. Tisch Center for Food, Education, and Policy at Columbia University.
Thanks so much, Rachel, and thanks to all of you for joining us for today's webinar. The time is right for strong advocacy on Capitol Hill, lessons and insights from policy insiders. We are really excited to be with you here today. Okay, I'm going to get this slide advancement. There we go. So, we have some really fabulous speakers today. I feel incredibly honored to be joined by these four smart, plugged-in women, each of whom bring a unique perspective and set of experiences to working on nutrition education, policy, and advocacy. We have Tracy Fox, who's the president of Food Nutrition and Policy Consultants. We have Jennifer Folliard, who's the director of USDA Legislation and Policy at the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. We have Melissa Malding, who's the director for the Purdue University Nutrition Education Programs. And we have Allison Hard, who is a dietetic intern here at Teachers College, Columbia University. So thank you all so much for being here. And I want to just make a quick plug about something that we'll talk about a little bit later on in this webinar. But the reason and the impetus for this webinar is to do something in advance of a pre-conference session for the SNEB conference this July in Washington, D.C. And when we were putting together the idea of that pre-conference session, we thought, you know, we really should hold a webinar ahead of time to get people excited, thinking about policy, and hopefully to incentivize folks to sign up for that and join us to visit some of our elected officials during the course of that conference. So we'll go more into some details about that later. Rachel told you all how to ask questions, and I just really want to encourage you to ask questions. There is no question too small, too simple, too basic. I know from my personal experience, I ask this group of women questions about policy and advocacy all the time, and they're always happy and gracious about answering them. So please don't be shy. No question is too small when it comes to policy. It can be a complex-seeming topic. So I'm going to just give a teeny bit of context, and then we're going to jump into our speakers. But I really want to tell you how excited we are today to have a chance to speak with you about the role that nutrition educators can and really should be playing in the policy realm. And we hope you leave this webinar feeling inspired and empowered to let your elected officials know what nutrition education looks like in your community and just how important it really is. This is a particularly important time to be speaking up on behalf of our field. I think a lot of us are feeling that way right now. For the past 8 years, We were working with an administration that really understood and prioritized good food, health equity, sustainability, these issues that sit at the heart of nutrition education. And we had a great champion for nutrition education in the White House. And things are looking pretty different right now. And there's a lot of uncertainty. And we don't know exactly what the future holds in terms of food and nutrition programs and policy. But there are definitely signs that our new political landscape could mark a real turning point from the gains that we've made over the past several years. So what do? So we get organized and we make our voices heard. And we do that through various policy and advocacy channels that you're going to hear about today. And we just really want to emphasize that experts like SNEB members are the ones who need to be out there letting our elected officials hear about the importance of our collective work. So that's my pitch to everyone. So let's get into what we actually mean when we're talking about our political landscape and hear from Jen about the lay of the land in DC. Things are happening so quickly, things are changing. If you were to look into your crystal ball, Jen, where are we now and where could we expect to be in late July when many of us will be converging in DC?
Thanks, Claire. I'm really excited to be on this webinar, and like you've mentioned, SNEB members are the experts on nutrition education, so in times of uncertainty, it's important to know who your experts are, and we need those experts to speak up. And as a new member of SNEB, I'd like to welcome those new members or potential new members. I do represent the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, and we have many of the same interests when it comes to nutrition education, because many of you are also members of the Academy. So to give a little background and potentially crystal ball looking ahead, I think on the congressional side or on the legislative side, what we're seeing, we can see from the last Congress that there was a great interest in SNAP. In fact, the House Agriculture Committee did about 18 hearings on the subject, one of which was dedicated to SNAP nutrition education. So we can expect that the House Agriculture Committee, as part of their farm bill discussion, will begin talking about SNAP and SNAP education. And actually, they have already. On the Senate side, we also anticipate the House or the Senate Agriculture Committee prioritizing the farm bill and prioritizing SNAP and SNAP nutrition education. What the Senate is dealing with, that the House is not, is that they have to go through confirmation hearings for political appointees from the new Trump administration. Of particular interest to this audience is Sonny Perdue, who's the nominee for the cabinet position of Secretary of Agriculture. We're expecting that his nominee or his hearing for that cabinet position will be hopefully in the next couple weeks. But from there, there are other positions within the Department of Agriculture that do require the Senate Agriculture Committee to proceed with hearings and debate those politically appointed positions. So that is where we were at. I think the uncertainty in particular is on the Trump administration and where their plans are for programs that mean that are meaningful to us and that are important to the people that we serve. One other thing that I would mention that's taking up a lot of oxygen and a lot of time and a lot of space in everybody's plate in Washington and out in the country is the repeal and replace of the Affordable Care Act. It takes up a lot of time. So, you know, we still might be dealing with that in June, July, we just don't know. So I would expect the farm bill to be on the plate in June or July, and hopefully we can see some politically appointed positions filled at USDA by that time as well.
Great. Thanks, Jen. There's a lot going on. And one question, just really quickly for our listeners, for the repeal and replace of the ACA, as I understand it, there is some nutrition education funding that lives within the ACA, like the Prevention and Public Health Fund funds some of that work. So this is something that folks should be paying attention to as well, both for that and as well as its broader implications, I would imagine.
Yes, the Prevention and Public Health Fund is in dire straits right now. It is in jeopardy. We are spending a lot of time trying to defend that. And much of the hearing in the Education and Workforce Committee debate that happened this past week was around, there was a significant portion of it that was dedicated to the Prevention and Public Health Fund.
Great, thanks. So a lot to be thinking about. So I want to move to Tracy and get into some of the nitty-gritty a little bit in terms of if we want to be weighing in on the ACA or on SNAP and SNAP Ed or the Farm Bill or other issues, what do we do? What are our options? There seem to be different points at which we can weigh in, so it would be great to hear what that looks like.
Sure. Thanks, and hi, everybody. It's great to see the variety of people on the call, the attendees, and just a reminder to please put your questions in the chat box, and we'll hopefully get to them. But if you think of anything just throughout any of our presentations, don't hesitate to jot them down. A couple things. I mean, I think sometimes when people hear the word policy, they automatically think of big mega pieces of legislation like the Farm Bill, like ACA, like appropriations or reconciliation. And while that clearly is you know, those are huge examples of policy making and policies. There's so much more that really falls under the rubric of policy that I think is important, especially for SNEB members and others, because that also means that there are more opportunities to weigh in on policy, and it's not just, you know, having to come to Washington to meet with your member or their staff. So there's regulations. Oftentimes when Congress passes a law, it's just a framework for basically directing an agency like USDA or Health and Human Services or EPA or whatever to issue more specific regulations that really put some meat on the bones in terms of the legislative language being very bare and the regulations really being there to fill it out. And it's a great opportunity to weigh in and influence policy. Examples of, you know, major pieces of regulations that have really had a major impact on the landscape of the food and nutrition environment across the country are things like updating the standards for the National School Lunch Program and Breakfast Program, updating the standards for Smart Snacks, updating standards for the Child and Adult Care Feeding Program. Oftentimes Congress will say these need to be updated, but they'll kind of leave it to USDA, hopefully, and the nutrition experts there to define what that means. And so that's an opportunity, USDA, HHS, all agencies that go through the regulatory process have to do it in a step-by-step fashion. So the initial step is usually a proposed regulation where they just put out there, this is what we're thinking, this is what we have come up with based on the best science and evidence we have, but we need to hear from you. That's not a final rule. They can't do anything in terms of implementation until they finalize a rule. So that proposed rulemaking step is really important, and anybody can weigh in. You don't have to be, you know, Academy or SNEB organization. You can be Tracy Fox or Jen Folliard or, you know, Claire or Allie or Melissa. Any one of us could weigh in individually as a person, and we urge everybody to do that. And you know, oftentimes the regulations are big and popular, and there's a lot of interest in them. For example, the Smart Snacks regulation that USDA issued a number of years ago drew close to 250,000 comments from the public. Now, about 245,000 of those were form letters, and only a couple thousand were really individual personal letters, but that just shows you the breadth and the interest of some of them. On the other hand, USDA issues regulations, not as much lately, but certainly they have issued smaller regulations, and they might just get a dozen comments. And in fact, Jen was commenting that A&D oftentimes will respond to smaller regulatory requests, like a request to review a survey instrument that's going to be used. And oftentimes you might even get a personal note back from somebody at USDA saying, hey, thanks for your comment. You had a question about this. So it really does vary. But regulations are a great opportunity. If you're trying to figure out, well, how do I know what's being proposed and what isn't? I would say just kind of sign up for a number of organizations' newsletters. SNEB has a weekly policy update that if there is a regulatory opportunity, usually that's going to be noted in there. AND has legislative updates. The Food Research and Action Center, like CSPI, others who you might be interested in what topics they cover, will provide updates and usually action alerts. So that's one way. And then, of course, there is legislation, like I talked about before, in terms of opportunities to weigh in. Right now, there's an opportunity to weigh in, obviously, on the proposals to repeal and replace Affordable Care Act. And I think there, just kind of log on to basically any Facebook page that you're following that's politically active, and you'll see a lot of opportunities to weigh in with your legislators, and we'll provide information a little bit later on in terms of how to find out who your legislator is. And then also, I think it's important, just in a larger rubric of policy. Policy change is it's tough, it's messy, as we're seeing play out, each and every day. It takes a long time, but a lot of policy change is built on, especially in our case, relationships, evidence-based, opportunity, and timing. So that's just sort of the scope of policy. There's a lot more to it, but those are the two biggies, and hopefully some ways that you can be involved as well.
So, Tracy, one thing that I think some of the folks on this call might have questions about is whether they can do advocacy. Are they prohibited from lobbying? What's the difference in semantics between advocacy and lobbying? Do they have really, are there legal ramifications there depending on where your funding comes from? And what role can folks play regardless of where they sit in terms of their funding or their role within an organization?
Sure. I see this slide is mislabeled. My bad, it should be advocacy versus lobbying. Advocacy is really hopefully what all of us should and could be doing each and every, day, if not hour, practically. And it really is just a set of skills that help create a shift in public opinion. It's mobilizing resources to support an issue, a policy, or a constituency, or a position. And there really are no statutes or legal terms for advocacy. A lot of the terms you'll see for advocacy are kind of created, by the organizations that are advocating for different positions. So, and you certainly don't have to register to be an advocate. A lot of the work that SNEB and 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 others do is, a lot of it is education and advocacy. It's really just trying to talk to people about the importance of healthy eating, the importance of creating environments that make it easier for the healthy choice to be there front and center. And that a lot of what we do, each and every day is advocacy. It's not necessarily lobbying specifically. And lobbying is, the term lobbying is defined in a lot of guidance that comes out from IRS and other organizations. And lobbying is very specific. It is influencing the legislative process through grassroots approaches. It is walking into your, your senator's office or your representative's office and saying, Representative Walorski, I really, really would urge you to support legislation XYZ, or take a position that is, pro or against XYZ. And so it's a very specific ask. And it's also generating support for others to ask for a particular legislator or lawmaker to take a position on a piece of legislation. So it's very specific, defined by the IRS. Certain organizations have limits as to how much lobbying they can do, how much percent of their budget can go towards that. Certain organizations are totally prohibited. State and local entities like state-funded universities and others have even more limitations, but oftentimes not super restrictive that you can't do it. There are definitely opportunities for even organizations that have limits on their lobbying to still take a position and lobby. So it's important to check with your overarching organization, but everybody can be an advocate. And when it comes to things like weighing in on the regulatory process, That's not lobbying. So that previous slide where we talked about weighing in on regulations, that's not lobbying. You're not taking a position on legislation because the legislation's done. You can always take a position on a regulation. That's not lobbying. So I think that's a really important distinction in terms of being really comfortable in the regulatory space. Maybe you just have to do a little more research to find out what your limits are within your organization on the lobbying space. But oftentimes people overinterpret what they can and can't do in terms of, or they're a little more conservative on the lobbying side than they need to be. So that's sort of the nuts and bolts of advocacy and lobbying from the non-lawyer perspective.
Great, thanks. And, you know, if folks on the call or on this webinar have specific questions, you know, would this activity count as advocacy or this activity count as lobbying, definitely type them in and we can address those as we get to the question section. So I want to move out of DC a little bit and talk about getting local. And I feel like this is something that leading up to and post the most recent election is a strategy that's getting a lot more thought and consideration and airtime, whether it's these town hall meetings that representatives are holding being flooded with folks or people not showing up to them. And so I think it's worth exploring that all this work doesn't have to just happen in DC. It's happening within cities and states and counties as well. So Allie, I would love for you to weigh in on this and talk about if we're spending a lot of time doing defense at the federal level and maybe encountering gridlock and uncertainty there, what could we be doing at the local level to move these issues forward?
Sure. Thanks, Claire, and hi, everyone. So first of all, it's important to know that all of your members of Congress, in addition to having offices in D.C., which you may not be able to visit quite as regularly, although we hope you'll join us in D.C. for the conference this summer, they do have district offices. And there's staff there, and they tend to be a little more tapped into what is going on in the district and what's happening locally. And so it's great to start to get to know those staff members and build relationships with them and really introduce yourself as an expert in nutrition education so that they're aware of what's going on in the district. You can start by reaching out, setting up meetings with those staff members, also inviting your elected officials and the staff to come see what you're doing, to see nutrition education in action. It's really helpful for them to actually see it happening. It helps them to understand what nutrition education really is and what it looks like. And, of course, it's a wonderful photo opportunity for them. You can see Senator Gillibrand here visiting a summer meal site with some really adorable children, and they appreciate that opportunity when it comes to them. Another thing you can do is attend their town hall meetings. So really when they're looking to engage with constituents in the community, be there and be a voice for the work that you're doing. And then of course, we have state and local elected officials as well. And sometimes it can be a little easier to work with them. Some of the issues that they're addressing might be a little less controversial perhaps than the issues being addressed at the federal level right now. So that can be a great way to get involved as well and just, start by educating yourself about what issues are being discussed and seeing where there might be overlap with the work that you're doing and where you could be a resource and educate them about the work you're doing and the importance of nutrition education. And again, just building those relationships so that people start to know you as an expert when there are questions and when issues come up that they might appreciate you weighing in. And I know, Melissa, you've done a lot of work at the local level in Indiana, so it would be great to hear a little bit about what you're doing there.
Yeah, thanks, Allie. And like everyone else, I'm super happy to be involved in the call today. And just as a matter of, I guess, encouragement to the 62 or so of you that are out there listening to us today, I wanted to own my sort of position here with this group of excellent ladies. I'm not here because I'm an expert at advocacy or policy, but I'm here because I think, because I'm an example of someone who saw the impact that policy had on us in 2012, where SNAP Ed was concerned, and didn't feel good about the role that I had played, or well, honestly didn't play, in making sure that the elected folks here in Indiana knew what SNAP Ed was and what the implications would be to a cut in SNAP Ed. So thankfully, I got to build relationships with folks like Tracy and Jen and others across the state and the nation to help me build those skills and the confidence that I needed to start reaching out and to start pushing my staff to reach out to our local elected officials, federal and state as well. So I say all that to say, you can do this. I did it, and you can do it too, and we all play a really important role in this advocacy or education, depending on how you want to term it. So back to Allie's question, specifically, because I am in a role where advocacy and lobbying is not an allowable activity for me working as a university employee under a federal grant, we do education. So it's important for us to do our part to support the activities of folks like Jen and Tracy to make sure that, one, they have the information about the research that we're doing that says SNAP Ed works, for example, and two, that we do our best to reach out to our district offices to make sure that they have that information as well. So I think that's the most important thing for us is to determine how we can best stay within our allowable activities in terms of our employers, but to make sure and communicate the message in an educational way and to make sure that that information is in the hands of those that can do things beyond educate. And so while we are working to build relationships with our staffers in the district, which is an allowable activity for us, I know that Tracy and both Jen and Tracy are doing work for us with that same information in a different way. So Tracy, I don't know if you want to talk more about what you're doing in our state.
Sure, yeah. Now that I'm in the great state of Indiana, I know many of you refer to it as a flyover state, but I would urge you, and I'm sure Melissa would as well, to stop by. In terms of a lot of the topical issues that are being discussed day to day in DC, but bringing it back locally and really kind of sitting down even with your House of Representatives member face to face with their staff to say, look, this is what's happening in Culver, Indiana, where you are representing the constituents, and this is how they are being impacted, whatever the case may be, positively or negatively. So for me, it's been really refreshing. I mean, I do a lot of work locally now, also with the town council, getting more involved at the state level on healthy food financing initiatives, and what I really like about it is just the ability to really, I mean, you call and want to set up a meeting, and it's like, sure, if they're in town, we'll meet with you. So I think, you know, don't hesitate to use the opportunity. It's not, you know, it's, I wouldn't even say going to meet with your staff or a representative in D.C. is intimidating, but, you know, it's just a little bit easier and certainly probably a little more comfortable for some of you who know your area well, know your town well, know the people in the town well. You are the voice that the member needs to hear from. Pretty, you know, like that's a really important role to play. And in fact, Melissa reminded me recently, and we were both at the Anti-Hunger Summit last week, where a presenter showed information about a survey that was done of congressional staffers, asking them what was the most effective ways for messages to get to them and for, you know, their lawmaker to be influenced. And number one on the list was district meetings, at-home district meetings back in back in the lawmaker state. And I would say that that would apply across the board for state legislators as well as your local policymakers. So don't underestimate that face-to-face at all. But yeah, it's been a great experience now living here in Indiana, really trying to put into action a lot of the things that we've been talking about for many years in terms of advocacy. And I know, Jen, actually that reminds me in terms of, because you all do such a nice job with A&D members and really motivating them and inspiring them to really sort of, you know, take on advocacy or education, whatever the appropriate term is, depending on kind of where you sit and who's funding you. But can you, like, share a little bit about what you're seeing from your members and what you guys are expecting from your members?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Tracy. And I just I want to also echo everyone else's point that there are huge benefits to in-district meetings. And what we're asking of our members is specifically that. We are requiring each, and I'm not sure if everyone on the call is familiar with the academy structure, so I can just quickly go over, just very quickly. We have state affiliates, and within those state affiliates, there are public policy panels and public policy leaders. And what we've asked our public policy leaders to do is to facilitate those in-district meetings with members of the academy. And I would encourage everybody on this call and beyond this webinar, and I would encourage them to hook up with those academy affiliates if possible. You know, even if you aren't an academy member, I am sure they would appreciate just knowing that they have support from other organizations like SNEB within the state. We are seeing great interest from our members about how to engage and where to engage, and we have been saying, you know, please go visit your district members, please go have state level, and they continually do have state level interactions and policy days with their state legislators. So we are encouraging our members to do those district visits. We encourage SNEB members to hook up with the Academy's affiliates. I think the more voices, the merrier around some of these issues where we overlap, like nutrition education.
Thanks to all of you for really digging into what it looks like to get active at various levels within your local communities. And I want to really jump into action. So we've talked about things in a sort of general sense, and now let's get a little bit more specific and talk about some specific action items. I know whenever I'm on webinars like this, I'm like, okay, so what next? What do I do? Where do I start? So I would love to get into that section of this webinar, and then we can jump to questions. And I'm not seeing a ton of questions now, so I just want to reiterate to folks on the webinar to please type in your questions. It can be anything topical about process, about what's happening with DC right now, a specific piece of legislation, and we'll certainly attempt to answer those. So just another pitch to ask your questions. So Jen, we're going to come right back to you and talk about, you know, I know for me it was very intimidating the first time I even considered doing a Hill visit with our elected officials here in New York. I found it rather terrifying, the whole prospect of it. So can you demystify it a little bit and just talk about what are the basic steps? Should it be as intimidating as it seemed to me initially? I mean, I can say now on the back end that it wasn't, but I think that that can be hindsight. So can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I can also attest to the fact that it can be intimidating, even for somebody who goes into Hill meetings every day, multiple times a day. It's gotten a lot easier, and I think I've gotten a lot better at it, but I remember my first couple of meetings when I was an advocate and a volunteer for the academy doing policy visits, and I just remember being completely terrified. So what I can say is if you are feeling that way, I think that's totally normal. I would say that it's easier if you go in. I'm just going to give a few just general steps. And then I'll give specific ideas on how to set up meetings. But a few general steps, I would go in with a buddy, at least one other person. I think sometimes conversations can be a little easier when you have someone else that has the same message, that if you forget something, they can, you know, fill in the gap. And sometimes it's just an easier flow of conversation. You never know how or who's going to connect with who when you're meeting with congressional staff. And just a note, anytime you're meeting with congressional staff, I would say the majority of those folks are extremely bright, but they are also sometimes short on life experience in the sense that they are between 25 and maybe 35. Years of age. So, you know, you may have, and I know that you do, have much more experience in nutrition education than these folks do. They're required to have an understanding of so many different topics that they have to encounter on the Hill that they probably are really thirsty for knowledge when it comes to your expertise, nutrition education. I would treat it, and I don't know if any of you have done have taken a class on motivational interviewing, but I tend to use some of the tactics I learned there in my dietetics degree, where, you know, you try to connect with the person as a person, you come prepared, have a good understanding of what your legislator might have an interest in nutrition education or what that interest or angle may be. And I always write down two or three points that I really want to get across in the meeting and make sure that I can keep coming back to those two or three points. Because when it comes down to it, I think the visit that you make with congressional staff, what people will remember is how you made them feel. And they'll remember maybe those two or three points from the meeting. You're obviously welcome, and I would encourage you greatly to follow up with many more facts. And read aheads or leave behinds. I think we're going to cover that early or next in the session. But I think I would just expect that you end up you are the expert, but you're teaching somebody, and you as nutrition educators have those skills. You use them every day. So if you think about it like that, I think it becomes less intimidating. So the nuts and bolts of how to actually make a meeting request on Capitol Hill. I think if you're planning to come to DC and you're planning to do visits with SNEB, I would just say the easiest way to do that is call sometime in June, probably no more than 4 weeks out from the conference, and ask to schedule a meeting with the Agriculture Legislative Assistant, Agriculture or Health. Either one is going to be able to deal with nutrition education. You can just literally say, I'm from such and such university. I'm from Muncie, Indiana. I would like to make a meeting with representative such and such agriculture legislative assistant. It is just that easy. So hopefully, you can do the bit. If you're going to make a district visit, you can use the same process, but just introduce yourself and say, I'd like to talk to somebody that deals with nutrition education. And that might not be an agriculture or a health LA. It might be the district, the district liaison, district staff. They might have different names. So I would say just call, tell them you're interested, tell them where you're from, and tell them what you want to talk about. Does that help?
That is great. And for folks who do sign up for this pre-conference session and who want to make Hill visits, we'll be laying this out in more detail. But I think just knowing that it's as simple as picking up the phone and calling, and sometimes maybe calling back a couple times until you get someone live on the phone and being persistent seems to be totally fine. That's all it takes. That it is their job to meet with you, right?
Yes.
So you mentioned leave behinds / read aheads, and that might not be a term that folks are familiar with. And we have a couple. Oh, yes, sorry. This is a little bit out of order. I'm going to jump ahead a little bit. We have a couple examples here from Melissa. Can you talk about these, Melissa, and why you like the term read ahead in addition to leave behind and what you mean by that?
Yeah, so Tracy had mentioned that we were both at the Feeding America Frat Conference last week, and one of the speakers said something that really keyed in to me and said, you know, we have historically called these documents leave behinds because we go, we talk to the member or the staffer, and then we hand off this piece of information that we want them to review. But he recommended that we would change that terminology and call them read-aheads, that we would provide them previous to our meeting to give the staffer some background. Hopefully they'll do a little reading and a little research, and we would point them in the right direction. And then we could also leave it behind with them as well. So send it to them in advance electronically and something that they can copy and paste. He said it's really important for us to put it in a format that they're able to copy and paste. And then also leave them that written document or the, you know, the tangible document there with them at the end. So what you're seeing here on the slide, the left-hand side is our annual impact report. It's a two-page document, so it's actually front and back. And on the back side of that document, there are some more specific outcomes that have resulted from our 2016 reporting year. And so that's obviously very general in terms of what's happened across the state. But one of the things that we've talked about as a panel that we want to convey to you today is the importance of really targeting the message to the member or the staffer that you're discussing this with. So on the right-hand side is a representation of one of those more personalized messages. So this is actually a document that comes from our e-newsletter that we distribute to all of our legislative contacts each quarter. And so we've also made the stories component of that letter into a PDF so that those are able to be shared with members in those type of meetings, but they're also going to be getting that electronically. So this is a way that we can really target whoever we're talking to. So for example, this one, this story that you see here is in the southeast part of the state. We've got other stories that would be more applicable for other members that are covering other districts. So as Tracy and others have mentioned, it's really imperative that we are talking to them about what's going on in their district. And not only that, but that we are, if we have the capacity, helping them to hear those stories from maybe the folks that have been impacted by them, or our staff members that are there on the ground and are able to really tell a more compelling story than maybe I'm able to as the director or administrator. So we try to think through that as much as we can. Does that help, Claire? Allie, sorry.
Yeah, and that's great. And Allie, can you talk about the read ahead / leave behind that's up on the screen right now as an example of, so what Melissa was talking about was more of educating, lifting up some of the real specific highlights of the programs going on through in their state. What about if you want to make an ask, like a specific ask, or ask your elected official to support a piece of legislation or an appropriation? What could that look like?
Sure. So what you're looking at right now is a leave behind or a read ahead that we developed last year when we were doing some visits on the Hill around appropriations, and we were very specifically asking for increased appropriations to the team nutrition program. And so we wanted to make sure and put our ask or what we were asking them to do right up front. So you can see that box where it says team nutrition funding. And so you can see what our FY17 ask was. You can also see the historical budget numbers, which is very helpful for them to see as well. Whenever you're talking about budget, they'd like to know where we were in the past. And then the other thing is that you just want to be very clear about what the program is you're discussing, because a lot of these, especially the legislative assistants, they may not actually be familiar with some of our programs, especially we found that with Team Nutrition. So just sort of backing up and taking the big picture view of explaining to them what is Team Nutrition, what does it do, you know, and as much data as you're able to provide. So we tried to do that as well and kind of explain what is the impact, you know, where is the money going, what would happen if we were to get this additional money, what would it go towards specifically. So just explaining that for them. And they do really like to see data as much as possible in terms of the impact of what the money would do. So trying to include that and trying to be very specific about what you're asking them to do and put that right up front, because these folks just don't have a lot of time. You know, they're very, very busy. And so in order to help them out, we want to just be really clear and concise and put the information right up front.
Great. Thanks, Allie. And we have a quick sort of factual question for Melissa. Melissa, do you put your funding sources on your materials that you send out to folks?
Yeah, that's a great question. Everything, and you couldn't see it from that slide because it's on the bottom, but everything that we send out, the terminology that we use, Purdue Extension Nutrition Education Program, a SNAP-Ed and FNAP-funded initiative, is on everything.
Okay, perfect. Tracy, can we hear from you on other actions that folks can take right now, and in addition to getting all geared up to go chat with their elected officials?
Yeah, but those are some really great points. I just remember many years ago when I first started out advocating and was learning and listening from others who were masterful at it, I remember listening to the main lobbyist for the American Cancer Society talk about sort of his tricks of the trade and rules of the road in terms of going in to meet with lawmakers. And to Jen's point, he basically said, you know, just envision yourself meeting with your, you know, 86-year-old grandmother. And she really doesn't know the issue well, but she's super smart and, in this case, super you know, a lot of life experience, but might not know the issue well. Just pretend like you're going to talk to her about an issue and make it really simple, like 3 to 5 points so that your 86-year-old grandmother will remember what it was you were saying and why. And I think that has stuck with me for years. So I think all of us who have done, you know, visited with our lawmakers and oftentimes the young, super smart but not as informed about our issue staff that you end up meeting with, the simpler you make it and the more you break it down, the more likely they are to remember you and what your issue was. And a couple other ways that I think that this last election has really made a lot of people aware of needing to stay more informed with a wide variety of news sources and not just your Facebook feed. Not that any of you would do that, but there are some real important opportunities for us to really be a little better read on what is going on around the country and certainly what the different viewpoints are. And I think, you know, obviously you're on this call, so you have an interest already in politics and policy. That's great. You know, stay up and stay current. Watch the news, whether it's honestly, I'm an MSNBC junkie. I can watch it 24/7. I force myself to watch other news outlets. Yes, even Fox News. And I think it's important for us to really make sure we're getting a variety of inputs in terms of policies and politics. And I think also, first and foremost, really know who your federal, state, and local lawmakers are. And we've already talked about meeting with them, but, you know, all you have to do is, you know, Google for me, you know, Indiana lawmakers, and it'll show me a list of my state house. It'll also usually show me a list of my two senators and my representative at the federal level. So first and foremost, do that. Write down their email address. Follow them on Facebook. Follow them on Twitter. Follow them on Instagram. They all have those pages, whether you like them or not. It's important for you to kind of be aware of what they're doing. Make sure that you're, you know, looking at your local newspaper on a regular basis to see what's going on, whether it's, you know, whatever, the sewer system being flushed out next week, or, you know, they're going to be having a hearing on fluoridation in the water. Make sure you're aware of what's going on locally. And also volunteer at food banks, pantries, and others, because oftentimes they are, you know, the face of our issues, and they also, oftentimes the leaders in those organizations are pretty attuned to what needs to change on the policy front in order for their program to run more effectively, and oftentimes you can be that conduit to that policy change. Sign up for newsletters. Like I said, there's a lot of free opportunities out there to sign up for newsletters, whether it's a local organization you're interested in or national ones. And like Melissa said, they send out, you know, pretty regular routine communications to their lawmakers. Do the same. If you see an article of interest that you think your local official or, you know, federal official would be interested in, don't hesitate to shoot them an email or find out what their staffer's email is. And send them stuff. I do that all the time here in Indiana. If I see a story, a local story, it's like, ah, I think Representative Walorski would really appreciate this. I'm going to send it to her and her staffer, Brian. And then invite policymakers and staff to visit your facility or agency. Cannot talk about how important this is. Cannot stress enough for them to see you in action and their constituents benefiting from the programs that we are passionate about. And certainly share your stories. That's first and foremost, a lot of the communication. And some of the icons I have on here, you know, NPR politics tends to lean a little left. Jen told us about one recently that she follows, the Wall Street Journal opinion on Potomac Watch tends to lean a little right, but they're both very, I really like them both a lot because they're really smart people talking about issues from a slightly different perspective. Don't have to say much about Fox and MSNBC and, of course, the local papers. So those are the main ways that, you know, these days, I know it seems like it's a lot to do, but pick your favorites and stick with them and just kind of make sure it's kind of part of your day or your every couple days to kind of be up to date on what's going on.
Thank you all. That was really, really helpful. And I'm going to wrap this section up just with one more pitch for this pre-conference session. It's you can register now. Registration just opened. The website is sneb.org/2017. You can see it on the right there. This is going to be half day, part of which will probably be spent heading up to the Hill. And for folks who sign up for this, you'll really get a crash course in the nuts and bolts, have an opportunity to practice, talk to the folks that you're hearing from today, as well as Margot Wutan from Center for Science in the Public Interest. And we'll make sure that the people who register have plenty of materials ahead of time that they can get ready for these visits and have timelines and sample materials that they can craft their own so that they're ready to join with their fellow folks from their states to head up to the Hill and talk to their elected officials. So this is going to be, I think, a really exciting and unique opportunity to have nutrition educators storming the Hill this summer. So I would love to see you all there. So let's go to some questions. I want to start with a more nuts and bolt ones. Tracy, can you just clarify whether supporting a particular regulation as opposed to supporting a bill, one is lobbying and one is not? That
sure.
Supporting a bill is lobbying, but supporting a regulation is not lobbying?
Right. So anything that deals with legislation, like, you know, HR, you know, umpty squat, that's a piece of legislation. And if you are taking a position on it, then you know, you are sort of technically going into the line of lobbying. I shouldn't say that. If you take a position personally, like I support HR, you know, 223, that's great, Tracy. That's really special. But unless I start to say, and lawmaker, I want you to support it, that crosses the line to lobbying. But once that bill is passed, once it's enacted and it's done, like it is final, it is law, then it's up to the agencies, HHS, USDA, you know, others, to issue regulations to really put some meat on the bones of that piece of legislation that's probably pretty brief in terms of the language. So once it falls into the regulatory realm and it's no longer considered lobbying because you're not taking a position on a piece of legislation, you're simply commenting on how the agency is looking to implement that provision of the legislation. So while they're very related, you know, a regulation falls, you know, comes out after legislation is passed. It's very different in terms of what constitutes lobbying and what just simply constitutes your, you know, your right to weigh in on an agency's actions on the regulatory front.
Great, thanks. This next one, a couple of people have asked a similar question, and this is for everybody. It's about the kind of evidence that we should be presenting. I mean, clearly a lot of us do evidence-based work or are trying to generate an evidence base for why what we do is important and interesting. What kind of evidence, in what form, are there particular sources that you all love to show people? What should we be bringing, and how do we message that?
Claire, this is Allie. Can I jump in on that?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. So just in my experience working with Claire at the Tisch Food Center, one thing we learned is to really tailor the evidence to the audience. So knowing what motivates that member of Congress, if it's cost savings, if it's health outcomes, you know, whatever that is that's important to them, and then kind of tailoring the evidence to that. And I also, I emphasized including data a lot in the leave behinds, and I want to be clear that it should be kind of the top line most impactful numbers, because they're not going to spend a lot of time, you know, reading. They're not going to go look at the study. You know, they don't really have time for that. So kind of the top line, you know, this program had this impact. They really like to see outcome data. That's kind of the feedback that we've gotten from folks is, you know, this program helped children lose weight or helped them to eat more fruits and vegetables by this much. That kind of thing is really compelling. Or if it's cost savings, you know, how much money was saved for the government, for taxpayers. So I think it's tailoring and then kind of keeping it top line is what I've learned in my experience, and then I'll let others weigh in.
This is Tracy. I just want to say I sort of totally agree with what Allie said. I think the other thing, and Melissa had a great example of the newsletter that, you know, has all the facts, you know, on the left, and then there was that really nice story about the farmers market in southern part of the state. One thing we learned at the conference last week, and that, you know, many of us know from our years doing this, is data-driven storytelling seems to be the hot term these days about how to do effective advocacy. And it's to Allie's point, you know, making it personal, but you need to have the data to back up your story. So to the degree that you can look at your data, look at the facts, look at the charts, and then try to put a personal face on that data, that to me is sort of the best ideal situation on how to really convey your message.
Okay, there's one other question that I want to end with, and I think what we can do, because there are going to be a few questions that we can't get to during this time, and there's some really good ones, and I think this question of evidence deserves a little bit more time so we can put together a more complete answer for folks that Rachel can send out. I want to end, making a pitch for anyone on this call who is not a member of SNEB to join. It's a great organization. It's really important that we're part of this professional association that has a pretty amazing history and a pretty exciting future, and certainly can weigh in on policy and advocacy. And this, just to end on this note of what, there is so much going on right now, and there is, it can be really overwhelming. Is there one thing, one issue, is it even possible to say that people could be putting their attention to right now?
Jen,
this is Jen. you know, I think on the top of everybody's mind is repeal and replace of the Affordable Care Act. If you're talking to folks on the Agriculture Committee, if you're members of Congress or either representatives or senators on the Agriculture Committee, I would say that you have fair game to talk about the Farm Bill as well. But if your member is not, I would say the majority of where their brain space is going to be is in the Affordable Care Act.
Okay, great. So that's where, at least right this very minute, we can be focusing our energy. And so, as I said, we will take a stab at answering some of the other questions that we didn't get to, because there are some really good ones. And we're just going to leave you all with this wonderful quote that sums up the power of advocacy. Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has. So thank you, Margaret Mead. Thank you, Jen and Melissa and Allie and Tracy and Rachel. Thanks for hosting us. And thanks to all of you for joining us today.
Excellent. Yes, thank you, Claire.
Thank you.
It's Rachel. Just a quick reminder, when we close the webinar today, there'll be a short survey. We appreciate your feedback. And watch for the follow-up email on Wednesday that will include the link to the slides, the recording that we're making, the additional material we had available, as well as your CEU certificate. And as Claire mentioned, we'll try to get any questions that weren't answered, we'll try to do a follow-up hopefully sometime next week emailed out to you so that you'll be able to get those answers as well. And as always, check the SNEB website. Claire mentioned that conference registration is now open. And also there's some upcoming webinars. Journal Club continues on Mondays. And then we've just added a webinar. The communications and the FNEE divisions are doing a webinar on the Mediterranean diet. I think that's April 12th. So I look forward to seeing you again on the next SNEB webinar.